In this episode, I talk a bit about how we humans can get into a rut of what is normal and expected, and what can happen when two people have a different opinion of what is normal and expected. So here we go, episode 271, Normal Isn't. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So, let's get started. So many podcasts start with like witty banter, but it's always just me. So I brought Dana here for some banter.
I love the banter.
You love the banter.
It's so awesome.
Do you know what banter is?
No.
Yeah, I looked it up. So what I often do on the podcast is if I'm talking about something, I look it up. So according to Merriam-Webster's dictionary.
I should be talking more.
Not right
if
now.
We're gonna have banter.
Yeah, but not when I'm in the middle of a sentence. Okay, so here's Merriam-Webster's definition of banter. I kind of took control of the banter, didn't I? So banter is a playful, friendly exchange of teasing remarks or jokes. It is lighthearted conversation where people joke back and forth without any intent to cause harm.
I'll shut up now.
Yeah, you know, I think reading the definition of what banter is supposed to be kind of put a damper on the banter.
Yeah, damper on the banter.
We put a damper on the banter. All right, well, we tried. Thanks.
You're welcome.
A while ago, a student told me a story, and I will change the names and the dates to protect the innocent and otherwise. But it made me think about this idea of what's normal. And what's normal to one person is obviously might not be normal to someone else. And so the story was that they were riding in a clinic with somebody, you know, a very good professional. And as they were preparing to do their ride, the clinician just kind of casually walked over as they were talking and tightened her noseband on her horse. And so, and without ever seeing the horse go, without saying anything, and just kind of clearly, habitually, just tighten the noseband. And so it was a really interesting moment because obviously that was normal for that clinician. Now, I'm not saying whether the person cranked it tight or not. The noseband started very, very loose. And it was just, he began to tighten it. And the student had the presence of mind, and as a dressage naturally student, had the confidence to say something and to say, excuse me, I'd like you to loosen that again. And then they asked, you know, what hole? And she's like, the last hole. So obviously the noseband was very loose. For reasons. But I think, so it's not about how tight or not tight. It was just about the, you know, these two worlds coming together in a learning situation, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But there's a normal for one person and a normal for the other person. And this was for the one person considered not normal enough that it was sort of like, of course, this needs to be adjusted differently. And this happens all the time. And I was so, I don't want to say proud, but I was so happy that my student was able to say, oh, I'm sorry, I have it, you know, adjusted like that for a reason. And was able to say that. And they said they put it back and it's all okay. But it was sort of interesting to me how that happened before even observing this person and horse that they had never seen before. But maybe in their world, that was something as normal as, you know, if you see a loose girth, you know, a loose girth is pretty standard of like, hey, that's dangerous. Your saddle might slip off. And usually if someone says, hey, your girth is loose, we're like, ooh, thank you. Of course, there's also people who crank the girth up. So I guess I was seeing the situation when I'm hearing the story from a student perspective, because I've been in those situations too, where someone has suggested equipment changes. But I mean, I can't think of a situation where someone just adjusted something on my horse. I mean, for a long time, maybe when I was a kid, but where someone just came up to me and like, I'm going to do this differently, you know, raise the bit or lower the bit or, you know, something like that. It just sort of seemed a little jarring to me. And as a clinician, I've had students come with all kinds of different equipment or lack thereof in the, you know, in the people that I teach, and they show up coming from different disciplines. Some show up bareback, some show up bitless, some show up bridleless, some show up with double bridles, you know, everything. I've had people show up with nosebands and spurs and, you know, all kinds of things. And my first instinct is to observe and to ask questions. And then from there, let's adjust. Because unless there's some like pain, immediate safety thing, and then I'll talk about it sooner. But I can't imagine making an adjustment other than maybe tucking a, you know, a loose flap in its keeper or something like that, that I would do without having a conversation with a student. So I just thought that was a really interesting moment, and one that probably happens all the time. And, you know, I've talked in other podcasts about the necessity to advocate for yourself and your horse. And I think it can be really confusing in these authority positions, and you want to be respectful, and because you want this person's opinion, and obviously you're there because they have expertise, and you don't want to be, yeah, butting everything. But I think, especially with equipment on your horse, we need to stop and go, you know, let's talk about it, or why are you doing that? Or would you like to know why I have it this way? So this word, this idea of what's normal kind of came to mind. I remember when I first sort of left the dressage bubble and went into the natural horsemanship community. This is in the late 90s, early 2000s, and on from there. And I remember there was this language where it was like normal versus natural. And that was kind of a little buzz phrase or something. You're either normal or you're natural. And normal, that word, was sort of code for wrong. You're either natural or you're wrong. You're either natural or you're cruel. And, you know, but it was kind of a little trap, because there definitely were things that were normal for natural horsemanship people, right? So, like, if enough people do it, or in your community, it's normal. So, you know, they, to use that word normal as a criticism, to me, was really strange, and it didn't make any sense. And it was very unspecific, and sort of by nature then confrontational. You know, it's like it's us or it's wrong. Anyway, so I think we have to look at this word normal, and normal is just what's normal for you or what's expected. I mean, that is the actual definition of normal. It's what's typical or expected. But there isn't one typical or expected thing, because there's lots of different groups and lots of different ways to do things. So I don't think that kind of labeling and that kind of thinking is particularly helpful. Anytime you name a group, you're going to stop seeing the individuals, right? Oh, they're just normal, or they're natural horsemanship, or they're this or they're that. I think there's too much of that in the world as it is, and we need to really get down to what's actually happening and looking at individuals in front of us. I think exchange of information comes through individuals, so there's always these opportunities to learn from each other. And we know that what's normal for a particular style or discipline or group often has become normal because it worked. It served a purpose. There was a reason. But then, of course, some of those reasons become archaic, like mounting and handling horses only from the left side because we don't wear swords anymore. Well, maybe some people do, but most of us don't. So I wanted to tell just a couple other stories and examples where someone criticized another for them not being normal, that was in air quotes, to them. I think I've told this story before in a podcast, but it just sort of stands out as like, really? What? Of having a student who on one of my Q&As for my courses said that their trainer or instructor had told them not to scratch their horse's itches because it makes you their slave. So normal in that person's world was you don't want to scratch your horse's issues. You don't want to scratch your horse's itches because it somehow puts your horse above you. Which, most of all, it's what a shame and what a missed opportunity to do something nice for your horse in their life. Anyway, I mean, I think most of you can agree that, like, that's, I don't know, maybe you don't. I think that's kind of crazy. I play lots of games. I love my horses to tell me where their itches are. And I tell them all the time, like, this is what human fingers are really good for. Like, as I scratch the inside of their ear or between their butt cheeks. Anyway, there's also, I've been in barns where they have a sign inside the barn that says all horses must be led with a chain over the nose. And this is like a sign that they like went to a custom sign shop and took some time designing and printing out and hanging, you know, like a metal sign in all their stallways. And I guess that would be a necessary way to stay safe if they're committed to consistently having horses who are stressed out or overly excited handled by people who aren't ready to handle that. So that might be what they've come up with is the best solution for safety in that circumstance. But I think it's really important to look at it that way and say, okay, here's this problem, and we're solving this problem in this way, so that's why we have a rule. But of course, someone like me, I want to look at that problem a little more deeply and go, well, what if we didn't have that problem, or how could we solve the problem in a way that we didn't need to do that? And maybe if I walked in that barn and I saw that sign and I got all judgy, and then maybe I asked a little more questions and I found out, oh my gosh, that's what's going on here. And that's why you do it. And it's just a, you know, for some reason, it's this temporary moment where this is going to keep everybody safe and alive. And then this other stuff happens. Like, we don't know. We might not know. I happen to know that that was just in a barn, a very high-level professional barn, and to me that seems like a red flag. But, you know, accidents can happen, and that's what they decided was going to be normal for their barn, and we're allowed to do that. There's another story. This one, I probably have talked about it on a podcast before, but it threw me for a loop. A friend of mine who's a trainer was selling one of her young horses, and I think it was 3 years old, and he was barefoot behind and very sound and had great feet. And they were there doing a pre-purchase, and the vet was there, and the vet even commented on how sound this horse was and how healthy their feet were. And the trainer of the buyer, the prospective buyer of this horse, pulled the owner of the horse, the trainer, aside and kind of like reamed her out. It was like, how dare you present a horse who's barefoot? That's so unprofessional. So in that trainer's world, it was normal that all horses wore four shoes. I'm not sure why having a horse with really good feet that was sound is now somehow unprofessional, But in that person's world, it was normal to be to have shoes put on at a certain age, and that's it. Where in, you know, my friend's world, it was normal to, you know, try to have horses with healthy feet as long as possible. And if they don't need shoes, then don't put them on. And that one sort of stands out to me because having shoes put on your horse sometimes is the best thing, but it's a really, it creates this really critical transition moment in the horse's life as a young horse, because when they're barefoot, maybe they have a chance of being turned out and learning some social skills and having that social connection with other horses. But when especially really expensive horses have hind shoes put on, it becomes more dangerous to be out with other horses. And so that moment where the horse has back shoes put on also is a moment where they begin their isolation and their social distancing from other horses, which, you know, can lead to so many, in my opinion, mental health issues for the horse. So that's why for me, normal is barefoot unless we have a reason to put shoes on. And sometimes, you know, horses are not all born with the healthiest, best feet. Sometimes they're ridden on surfaces. Like, I am not anti-shoe if it's an appropriate decision. So just really, really interesting to see those two worlds kind of collide. And then here's a really silly story. Back from when I was spending time with Pat and Linda Pirelli, when I first, you know, stepped outside my dressage world. And, you know, there's a lot of cultural things that were different going from, you know, Long Island, New York out to, you know, Colorado and seeing people who, you know, I remember sitting across from this one guy. I'm a little embarrassed about this, but, you know, he's wearing a cowboy hat and a silk scarf and a plaid button-down shirt and, you know, jeans and the chap things with the fringe and the boots. And I'm looking at him going, that's how we dress up for Halloween in New York. And it wasn't meant as a criticism. I was just like, wow, talk about different normals. But that was his outfit. And all of those things, I'm sure, well, a little bit of fashion. I'm sure there was a little bit of that there, but they came, you know, they had purposes. They were a tried and true uniform for that kind of thing. So I remember just sitting there being like, wow, normal. My normal is different. My normal sitting in a whole other different kind of normal right now. But I was a Levi person in a world of Wrangler jeans. And I was fine with that. I wore my breeches and I wore my Levi jeans. But I remember as I was learning there, and, you know, Pat and Linda were actually quite, quite generous with letting me just be there and soak in as much as possible. But, you know, going up the levels and learning as much as I can. And I remember Pat was like, said something at some point, like I couldn't be assessed any higher until I started wearing Wranglers to kind of show my, you know, my dedication. And I remember thinking that's absolutely ridiculous. And I think I'm a little bit ashamed to say I probably did go buy a pair of Wranglers just because why not? Why not buy a new pair of jeans? But I'm a Levi person. But that, you know, the brand of jeans that you were wearing was saying something about my dedication to this style of horsemanship. It's just ridiculous, people. It's ridiculous. Unless there was some sort of special function that Wranglers had that was different, then maybe I could be talked into it. I don't know. Maybe their seams were different. I don't know. I didn't see a difference. Anyway, but that's what we silly humans do. We tend to, you know, judge people by their equipment, by their clothes. And if we don't judge, we're at least noticing. I mean, we have to admit that we are noticing. I will make a confession. I have a little bit of a thing. I'll call it a judgment, but I'm very aware of it. So when I notice it, I kind of try to stay there a little bit and go, huh, okay, what am I seeing? But I have a little thing about people who wear big rowel spurs when giving a horse their first rides. I almost said putting on their first rides because that's the language that people who wear big spurs, big rowel spurs often use when doing first rides. I don't want to put a ride on a horse. I want to, you know, arrive to the ride together. But so when I see, you know, a young horse getting their first rides and the person wearing big rowel spurs, I cringe a little bit. That normal clashes with my normal and I'm aware of it. I don't personally see the purpose. I think it's overly risky and could offer great discomfort to the horse. And I think to me, it feels just a bit ego-y, human ego-y to me. So I am calling out my own judgments around something like that. However, I am sure that there are, and there have been, some really artful horsemen who do it. And they have enough control over their legs that it doesn't cause anything bad to the horse or doesn't create, you know, situations that don't need to be created because they accidentally bopped them with their spurs. So again, when I see something like that, I can feel myself like twitch and I turn my head a little sideways and I take a deep breath and I go, okay, let me watch and let me see. Are they wearing it just because that's the normal outfit of the circle that they're in? Or are they aware that they're having them on because they were riding another horse with them and they're starting this horse and they just know what they're doing and they know they have enough control? Or are they just wearing their Halloween costume and they're not mindful of what that spur accidentally hitting the horse's side on their first rides might do and might unduly cause stress to the horse when they could make it a lot easier? It also feels a little dominating to me, I have to say. Anyway, just airing my own judgments because I'm not here on a soapbox to look down on everybody. So, and I think, you know, for sure, there are plenty of horrible, mean people doing horrible, mean things to horses who don't wear big rowel spurs. So there's that. Anyway, I try to acknowledge my own judgments, notice things that aren't normal for me, and try to suspend that judgment and observe. Observe the actions. Let's take a minute. So to use that example of the student in the clinic with the loose noseband, you know, maybe that clinician could have noted it and observed. And if the noseband was flopping around and the horse was kind of doing stuff with his head, obviously getting bothered by it, then they might go, you know, I see your horse doing this and I see the noseband hitting them here. Would you mind if we just snug that up a little bit? So, you know, there's no right or wrong, right? And we have to remember that this human ability to notice what's different, you know, to notice the other, is in there to help us survive, right? We want to make sure, hey, if they're not one of us, they might be dangerous. But when things look different than us, it's only in reference to how we look. And we have to know we're going to look abnormal to them. What's normal for you doesn't mean it's correct or incorrect. It just means it's what's usual or typical for you and what's expected by you. So if we see something that doesn't look normal to us, we can change our expectations. We can suspend judgment. We can wonder why this person does it that way. And we need to know the reasons why we do things. If someone tells you you need to do something differently, you can ask them, would you like to know why I do it this way? Or you can just say, thanks, I'm fine, because you don't always need to explain yourself. And if they tell you how they think you should do something, you can ask, well, what's the benefit of that? Why? They may have some helpful wisdom or unhelpful narrow-mindedness. Either way, you're going to learn something and you can be more conscious about what you're doing and why. Hey, I just wanted to take a quick second to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by the Dressage Naturally Video Classroom. Yeah, that's my program. So if you love this podcast, you will really love the video classroom. It's where you can see me coaching students, narrating my rides on horses, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and so much more. So let's see all these words put into action. Check it out with a 1 week free trial, and then it's just $29 a month after that. So even if you only watch one video a month, it is totally worth it. So what are you waiting for? Go to dressagenaturally.net/classroom. Okay, now let's get back to the pod. So we can all learn from each other, but we have to remember we're not all heading in the same direction, and we don't all want to end up in the same place, and that's okay. But humans love to put things in neat packages, and humans want to feel good about themselves and their decisions. They often want others to do as they do so they feel better about what they're doing. Or often they want to be truly helpful, even if they don't have all the information. I just realized I'm talking about humans as if I'm not one. Interesting. Anyway, I think whether we are helpful by nature or we just like to feel right, we all have to remember that what's normal for us may not be normal for another. And the more flexible in our thinking and awareness we are, the more chance we have of finding what works for our particular horse and situation, because we've been observant more than judgmental. If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse, move in harmony, and enjoy the process.